The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Oh, snapped. I think we should address the elephant in the room here.
The dog in the yard?
Yes, here. We should address the dog in the yard.
Yeah. So we, I live in a neighborhood and other people have dogs, which is rude. I'm the only one who's supposed to have a dog, but here they are having dogs.
Yeah, they have the nerve of these people.
And they let their dogs out when I'm clearly recording. It's not okay with me.
Well, and they know what they're doing. They know.
They're doing it on purpose, what they're doing. But yeah, so our neighbor's dog is out and barking. If you can hear it, I'm so sorry. I'll do what I can to edit it out, but okay. Moving on. So, oh yeah. Also though, if you like the show, you want more episodes, you can go to Killer Queens. That's our other show.
Yes. You can, there's potential to have upwards of, there's potential to have 3 episodes for Killer Queens if you join the Patreon.
Mm-hmm. And then this one makes 4.
Yay.
So you could have lots and lots of eps.
Yeah. You can be like, I wish I had more, and then you could just have it.
And then you would have it. Boom, you have it. And also follow us on Instagram. We do not much there, but we're going to start.
Yeah, it's going to happen. There's reason to follow.
Yeah. So if that doesn't sell you on it, I don't know what will. Okay, now let us begin this episode, which is Brenda Andrew.
November 20th, 2001. 39-year-old housewife Brenda Andrew and her husband Rob were standing in the garage of their Landsbrook home. A normal evening. That was about to change.
When they turned around, there were 2 persons wearing a black mask and wearing dark clothing.
Shots were fired.
The crime was heinous and it was cold and cruel.
And it wasn't over yet. Soon Brenda Andrew, her 2 children, and a family friend disappeared into thin air.
Boom, credits. And then we just go, Brenda Evers was born. Like,
it's just so disjointed, it is what it is.
Yeah. Brenda Evers was born on December 16th, 1963, to a hardworking Lutheran family in the small town of Enid, Oklahoma.
Now, we were just discussing this because all the mention of Lutherans makes me remember the movie Drop Dead Gorgeous, which is so good.
So good.
It's so funny. That's in, it's not. It's in Minnesota. Mount Rose, Minnesota. Mount Rose Teen Princess Pageant.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yes, and they are all, well, the main girl, Becky, and one of the other girls who blows up on her dad's thresher, they were members of the Lutheran Sisterhood Gun Club.
Oh.
Remember?
Yeah. God, that movie is so funny.
It's so
funny. I need to watch
funny.
It again because it's been so long. Like,
I've got it.
Yeah. We need to have a movie night.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So these are
Okie Lutherans.
Okie Lutherans. Okay, good. Brenda and her sister were into all kinds of activities growing up, and most of them centered around the church. So her sister is Kimberly Bolin, and we hear from her throughout.
She's got great face framing hair.
Oh, she does. It's great.
It is perfection.
I was thinking when I watched it that she probably had a blowout before recording, and then also Dr. Diana Falkenbach totally got herself a blowout. In season 1, She keeps pulling her hair back really tight into like a half ponytail situation. And I think she watched that footage and she said, never again. And in season two, she's coming at us with a blowout and it looks great.
Blowout of the gods.
Mm-hmm. It looks great. I mean, I think that if you're going to be in a show like that, honor it.
Well, and Snapped is one of those shows, much like the local news, where you see people being on TV and you think, did you not just run a comb through your hair? What's going on here?
Something.
I know. You knew you were going to be on TV, right?
Yeah, like maybe this isn't like Super Bowl halftime levels of people watching.
Sure.
But there are people watching. Yeah, run a comb through your hair. They both look great.
Yes.
They're doing it. But she said they both went to a Lutheran grade school. They did youth group activities. They were members of Ongoing Ambassadors for Christ. And they both worked at a Lutheran camp. We also hear from Greg McCracken, defense attorney for Brenda.
I always think about, was his name Bert? Was it McCracken or just Bert Crack? No, it was Bert McCracken. He's the lead singer from The Used.
Oh, I don't. That's his name?
Bert McCracken.
That's funny.
I know. Isn't he such a Bert McCracken?
He's totally a Bert McCracken.
Oh, yeah.
I just think of Release the Kraken.
Oh.
That's all I can think of.
The secret weapon. It's not the same.
No, but it's similar. Okay, so the defense attorney for Brenda said that she was the type to be at church anytime the doors were open. So she's super, super involved. She carries that into her adulthood. She just grew up around it.
She is steeped in Lutheran stuff.
Yeah, okay. She is. The narrator says that Linda was a pretty good Lutheran, but she was also a pretty good flirt. What's happening?
This is where my blood starts to boil a little bit.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So she said that, yeah, because when we talk about the opinion of the church members of her later, that
kind of bothered me.
Yeah. So they said by the time she got to high school, her sultry smile and model perfect figure were turning the heads of nearly every schoolboy in Enid.
So I'm sure that she had a model perfect figure. That's not what I'm debating. The sultry smile, though, because the pictures that they show of her, she kind of just looks like girl next door. I don't see the sultry side of it.
What I'm wondering is Enid a very small town?
Yes, it is.
And is there just not a lot of options? I'm sorry, but she doesn't.
It's like that teeny tiny little class where you get two superlatives because there's not enough to go around. So this is that. And they're like, okay, you're going to be wholesome and also slutty.
Yeah.
Because we don't have two
yeah.
people to fill those out. So you got to be both.
You're the only one. You get both. Yeah. Yeah, I just kind of think like maybe she was just the main option.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I guess.
I mean, we grew up in a little school. Like I remember being in grade school and there was only two or three boys in any of my entire grades that weren't one of my cousins, like distant cousins. So it's like, that's
options
all I had to
are
pick
limited.
From. Yeah. I was like, okay, do I like this boy or this boy? Those are my options. Like,
yeah.
That's it.
Like small pond.
Yeah. One youngin who couldn't keep his eyes off Brenda was Rob Andrew. And Kimberly said that they met Rob at the swimming pool one summer. Rob's little brother was always at the pool and he was apparently talking to Brenda all the time.
Well, she's a hot piece of you know what.
Oh, yeah. Enid.
Grade A, top choice Enid meat.
Oh, gross. It's from Wedding Singer, yes?
Yeah.
Yuck. Okay. So Rob was also born and raised in Enid, and he was also in church every Sunday. Kimberly said that his values were pretty much aligned with Brenda's, even though he was Baptist and she was Lutheran. They made it work, though. They were able to see past their whatever the differences were. I don't know. I'm not super familiar with either one as far as like ins and outs. But as soon as they met, pretty much from that day forward, they were together all the time, totally inseparable. And when Rob moved to Oklahoma State, Brenda followed. He was pursuing a degree in advertising and he made the dean's list. And Brenda got good grades too, but she seemed more interested in like supporting him in his goals and not necessarily putting her schooling or whatever first. Like that wasn't her top priority. Him finishing school was her top priority.
Interesting.
A few months before graduation, Brenda and Rob got married, and here's Dr. James Murray. He said that she seemed drawn to Rob because those early parts of her life where she was looking for stability and security and tradition were met by Rob. And I was like, are they gonna...
They didn't say anything about her, like, searching for that.
They didn't say anything about her missing that growing up, like...
They didn't even talk about her parents at all.
At all. It was just, yeah, she grew up in a small town, and she and her sister were super involved in church. Yeah, so I don't know.
I mean, what that did means. John Cougar Mellencamp, but it's like, you know, doesn't mean he was looking for stability or security or whatever.
Exactly. I think he was looking for a party.
True.
So yeah, I mean, just a lot of, what does that even mean? And that's not Dr. James Murray's fault.
That's Snap's fault.
Because we don't know anything about her growing up. Like, if that's pertinent to the case, then, you know.
They didn't turn and share
about it. Yeah. After college, Rob took a job with a successful ad agency in Oklahoma City. While Rob worked long hours, Brenda began building a career in banking until 1991 when they had their first baby, a daughter named Tricity.
Now, here's the problem I have.
Yeah.
The name Tricity.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I was like, okay.
Yeah, I was like, what kind of name is Tricity?
It's not one.
I know. I mean, if you're listening and your name is Tricity.
It's beautiful.
I'm sure it's great. Yeah.
It just. It's like trying to be Felicity.
Yeah. What is
it? And like Trisha.
Yeah. 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 This is coming from a Torella. Okay.
True. Yeah.
So I get it. All right.
But it's one of those names that I feel like when you're in the seventh grade and you're playing house or school or whatever, and you're like, I'm gonna have a daughter named Tricity.
Like, I know Aleka. Exactly what you're doing there.
I found a notebook recently that said Aleka's notebook, and it was a name that Torella had either given. We were playing and she was Aleka or some, I don't know. Aleka, much like Tricity, not names.
They're not names, yeah. No. Yeah, maybe Brenda made that name up when she was in the seventh grade, much like I did with Aleka. I don't even know what that is. It was like Alec and then an A on the end of it. I'm like, what even is that?
Becca and Alexa had a baby. Aleka.
That's interesting because my best friend at the time's sister's name was Becca. Maybe that's what I was trying to do.
You should have called yourself Becca.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been too obvious.
That's true. Yeah. Too much of an homage.
Yeah. Anyway, when Tricity was born, Brenda quit her job to become a full-time mom. And 4 years after Tricity was born, they had a son named Parker. And luckily for Brenda, Rob was making six figures at that time in the 90s.
Early 90s. Early 90s.
Yeah. So she was able to stay home. No problems. And they still were able to buy a home in an upscale neighborhood of Landsbrook. So they're doing very well.
Oh, yeah.
Roland Garrett, homicide detective, said that the area that they were located in was a very affluent neighborhood. It had very nice homes. It was filled with professionals. One of their neighbors, Judy Gigstad, said that when you buy a home there, you sign a covenant agreement that you'll abide by certain rules and regulations. Sounds like an HOA to me.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, it's a really fancy, vague way of calling it an HOA.
Yeah, like you could have very well said our neighborhood had an HOA, but she made it sound like this secret society where you like have to be indoctrinated and sign it in blood and all kinds of stuff.
It's like the, what is it called? Stonemasons or what are they called?
Freemasons.
Yeah.
Brenda seemed to love her new life at first, and they kind of made it, they talked about how she went from this country girl to this suburban supermom.
Supermom that had it all, could do everything.
Yeah, now she lives in this fancy neighborhood, her husband's making a bunch of money, like all this stuff. So they talked about how that was just this like total transformation from how she grew up. So I think that's why they're calling it like her new life,
which is kind of surprising to me because coming from a small town, I feel like that in a lot of ways, small town life, it's nothing to scoff at or anything, but I feel like a lot of times it's like, especially in the South, it's what's expected of you. So it's I mean, it might not be what you're into, but it, to be like, whoa, that she was really shocked by the transformation, like, kind of what you're supposed to do, quote unquote supposed to do. So I'm just kind of,
yeah,
I'm shocked that she was so shocked.
Well, she loved it at first.
True.
So at first she wasn't so shocked. But her sister said that, like, she would go rollerblading. She went to Parker's soccer game. She went to Tricity's ballet. She was super involved. And the narrator said, Brenda maintained her quote-unquote knockout figure well into her 30s and dressed to take full advantage of it.
And while they're saying this, and I added the quotes around knockout because yeah. I'm not saying anything about her figure.
Yeah.
What she was wearing, I guess maybe it's very 90s. It's like this floral dress that comes just slightly above the knee. And I wouldn't call it form-fitting.
No. Yeah. And they said that people at her, at the church, well, North see, Point.
It's right down here. Yeah.
Okay. And North Point Baptist Church. So she taught Sunday school there. And they said that her close-fitting dresses struck some of the parishioners as a bit of a distraction. We'll post this picture because the picture, yeah, is like, I wouldn't even call it form-fitting. And also, the fact that you wear, okay, so either if you wear something form-fitting, then you're a slut. If you wear something loose, then you're frumpy, or you've given up, or you've let yourself go, or whatever. Like, what can we do that is okay? Like,
well, yeah, it's like, what do you want from a woman?
Yeah.
Like, you can't.
And if she did, like, it looked like, I don't know how much weight she gained during pregnancy or whatever, but she appeared to have lost all of it, you know, whatever. She did. She kept her figure. She didn't look any different after she had kids. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure she was proud of that. Like, fine. Wear stuff that fits you. How is that a problem? Like, and if you can't go to church and pay attention because a woman is wearing a dress to her knee where you can barely tell that she has a woman's figure, then you've got some problems there.
All of those churchgoers would have had a million heart attacks seeing me, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to call myself a sleut, but I'm just saying.
Well, and the tattoos and the pierce, it's a whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's a whole thing. Yeah. It would have been like a mass casualty incident.
Do tattoos hurt?
Hurt the ones you love.
Hurt the ones you love.
So, and this is where Dr. Falkenbach says the church was fairly divided on how they felt about her. On the one hand, they liked her and they thought she was a good Sunday school teacher. And then on the other hand, they thought that she dressed too provocatively and tested the limits a little bit. Like, the limits of who? The limits of what?
Right.
She's wearing form-fitting clothes, so what?
She wore a 3/4 length sleeve.
I mean, she might as well have been naked.
Naked is the day she was born.
Mm-hmm. She tested the limits further when she befriended fellow Sunday school teacher James Pavatt. Were you saying Pavatt or Pavatt? They said both.
I say Pavatt.
Okay, Pavatt.
I want to go ahead and say that I spelled his last name correctly out the gate.
Wow.
Just guessed.
Wow.
I know. Gotta toot my own spelling bee horn.
That is impressive. The church attendees thought that they were a little too close than was appropriate. This church seems very nosy.
Very.
And judgy.
Oh my gosh, judgy for sure.
They were right about this, but, you know, they were like, but I feel like, I don't know, these, at this church, anything that you do is closely monitored by somebody. Like,
oh, for sure. And there's going to be like little rumblings around the church. Like, did you just see? What?
Mm-hmm.
Brenda?
It reminds me of that show, GCB. Like, it feels like that, you know, because every time something happens, they're like, yeah.
I miss that show.
I know, it was so funny. So James was an insurance agent by trade, and he'd just gone through a bitter divorce, and Brenda thought it was her duty to occasionally offer a shoulder to cry on, and they said that she felt like it was her duty as a good Christian woman. And I'm like, no, we don't use that as an excuse to...
People use that as an excuse to do a lot of things, especially in the South.
Oh, yeah.
Where they gossip about you, but they call it praying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, oh, yeah, a good Christian woman does this or that or whatever. Like, sure, you can befriend somebody. There's nothing wrong with having friends of the opposite sex, obviously. But she was doing more than that. And she was also, like, once you start comforting somebody, like, through a divorce.
Well, and you get close to them emotionally.
Yeah. And they're confiding in you. You're opening a door. Like,
that's a slippery slope, man.
It is. There were rumors that she was offering him more than just a shoulder. And those church ladies knew it.
I think it was a little front butt action.
Oh. But Brenda was like, no, Rob. Like, because people started telling Rob, like, hey, I think your wife is having an affair with James. And so he confronted her about it. And Brenda's like, no, we're just friends. Everything's fine here. Don't worry about it.
So then Rob becomes friends with them, too.
Yeah.
She's like, well, why? I don't have any reason not to trust them.
Yeah, exactly. He seems just like a super great guy.
I know. And very sweet looking.
Yeah, he was. So they become very good friends. They prayed together. They went hunting together. Rob even purchased a $1 million life insurance policy from James because he's the insurance salesman.
And guess who was the beneficiary?
Uh-huh. Brenda, which makes sense.
That makes total sense.
It's his wife. So this is where we hear, you know, Brenda had it all. She had a loving husband, two children, a big house. By some standards, it appeared that she'd achieved it all.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
But when her 40th birthday approached, she started to question what she had become in the process.
And here comes James Murray again.
Mansplaining. So he says that women can attempt to become the perfect suburban mom, and these women have difficulty discovering, like, looking inside themselves, who they are, what they want. And that's true.
Well, and we get a little Mulan on us, like, when will my reflection show who I am inside?
Oh my God. I never understood what that meant until just now.
I thought so.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge, like, loss of identity with motherhood and all those kind of things. Like, you put, and I think even with marriage, like, I think women are, in society, taught to put ourselves aside
and fit into whatever box is expected of us.
Yeah, we have to do what we're supposed to do or support our husbands or whatever. And there's nothing wrong with supporting your husband when he wants to go to school or whatever it is. But
I think what happens a lot of times, and I think a lot of people can be like, yeah, that actually has happened to me, is you're forced to be put into this impossible box that you will never be able to fit in. And then you have to apologize for not being able to fit in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you become Reba.
Yep. Is there life out there? So much she hasn't done. Is there life beyond her family and her home? She's done what she should she do what she dares? She doesn't want to leave. She's just wondering, is there life out there? Yeah, she's exactly Reba, I think, at this point. And I think her approaching her 40th birthday, she's very like, what am I doing here? Like, am I going to live the rest of my life bored? Not happy?
Mm-hmm.
Fitting into...
Unfulfilled?
Yeah, trying to fit into something that I'm really not, and also not knowing what I actually like.
Well, and being judged all the livelong day when you're not even... Well, one part of it was not even true.
Yeah, one part of it wasn't true. Yeah.
The affair rumors didn't help her looking slutty rumors.
Right.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they were probably like, she hadn't worn those 3/4 sleeve dresses.
I know.
Come on.
She didn't wear those Bermuda shorts.
Yeah, exactly. Like, guys, Caprice, you could see her ankles.
Pedal pushers on a Sunday? Are you kidding me?
On a Sunday. But Brenda's uncertainty and unhappiness took a toll on the marriage in October.
Of course it did.
Yeah. In October of 2001, Brenda and Rob separated. Rob was against it, but agreed to give her some space.
And I think that's got to be a really tough position for Rob anyway, because he probably just is like, I mean, I could understand him being like, look at what we have. What's wrong? What are you missing? What am I not giving you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, I don't think that he could blame himself. I don't think that she could blame him. It's just this thing.
Yeah.
Void in her life.
Yeah, just what happened. Dr. Falkenbach said that Brenda appeared to have a flirty and adventurous side and needed to try to pursue that. So, not long after the separation, though, strange things started happening. On October 26th, Rob got a call that Brenda was in the hospital, but due to some car trouble, he never made it there. Philip Rogers, a mechanic, said that around 9:15, 9:30 that same morning, he came into his shop. His emergency lights were on.
Rob's emergency lights were on in his car. Sorry.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Philip's weren't.
Rob's emergency lights were on in his car, and there were virtually no brakes on his car. They'd been cut.
So this is reminiscent of Man of the House.
Oh.
Remember?
Uh-huh.
Chevy Chase, whose last name I think is Sturgis.
Huh.
And he is trying to get to the big camping thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And those bad guys cut his brakes. And then it's so, those kinds of movies. I'm turning this slowly into a podcast just critiquing old movies. But then they're like, oh, we didn't get him, whatever. And it's like, the police are right there listening to what you're saying. Like, they didn't, you know, just silly stuff. Because Chevy Chase is the prosecutor trying to put them away.
Okay.
Or they put the dad away or something.
I don't remember all of that.
I just recently watched it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Farrah Fawcett, Gorge.
Oh, man, yeah. But, okay, so his brakes being cut was not the strangest part of that whole thing, which is like,
what?
Exactly. When Rob called the hospital to check on Brenda, so he's rushing over there to check on her because he doesn't know what's wrong with her, and they're saying, you've got to get here immediately. So he calls the hospital because he can't make it there, and they're like, what are you talking about?
She's been dead for 6 years.
She's not here.
Yeah.
Never checked in.
Never even heard of her.
Never even heard of her. Don't know what you're talking about. By November, Rob and Brenda were working out the details of the separation. So Brenda was going to stay in the house and have primary custody of the kids. Rob would take them on weekends and holidays. 2 days before Thanksgiving, Rob pulled up to the home to pick up Tricity and Parker. And Brenda greeted him in the garage. And she said she was having trouble with the furnace.
Yes.
So we also meet another defense attorney for Brenda, George Mizgofsky, I guess. He said that Brenda couldn't get the pilot light lit, and Rob was helping her with that. So I guess the normal protocol would be the kids would just go out and get in the car. But at this time, she walks out and says, hey, come help me.
I need your help with this. Yeah.
I need help with the furnace. So he gets out to help her, but he never got the chance to get it lit.
And what happens next comes from Brenda's mouth.
Yes.
She says, two masked gunmen ran in, a shot fired, it hit Rob, another shot hit Rob again, and then one more shot hit Brenda in the arm.
Mm-hmm. And she was able to run inside and call 911. Moments later, police arrived, and they found Rob lying motionless in a pool of blood on the garage floor, and he was already dead by that point. I mean, what are the odds? At the very moment that he comes to pick the kids up for their exchange, I'm sure it's not same exact time every single week, you know? They literally timed it to the moment that he walks into the garage. Come on.
Exactly. Like, it's a little too convenient.
Yeah. Because it's not like it was just like they were all at the house for a whole day, you know? It's like he had to have been there right at that moment and just, like, that raises a red flag. So Kimberly, Brenda's sister, said that she was just totally devastated about Rob's death, and police were trying to figure out what happened. The EMTs took Brenda to the hospital to care for her gunshot wound, but her injury was just superficial, and she was sent home immediately.
Talk about names.
I know. The prosecutor, his name is Galen Geiger, I guess.
Yes. He had to become a prosecutor.
Oh, yeah.
With that name.
Yeah. G-A-Y-L-A-N-D. Galen, I guess.
Yes. Geiger. Again, reminiscent of Gaylord.
Fokker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
I do, too. And I like him. He said that it turned out that the type of injury that Brenda sustained versus the injuries that Rob sustained were so drastically different.
These were fatal. She had, like, it 'tis but a flesh wound.
Exactly. Like, at first, it sounds like legit, because if you just hear the initial report, two people were shot, one was taken to the hospital, right? Okay. That sounds like they were both shot. But then once you see that Brenda's is literally a scratch, then you're like, that's very disproportionate. Why would somebody shoot him in such a way and then graze your arm and leave you to run in and call the police? That doesn't make any sense. It's not typical.
No.
So.
It's very Diane Downs.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone that heard about this was like, oh my gosh, Brenda is so lucky to be alive. Except for police.
Yeah, they were like, this seems
fishy.
Mm-hmm. Michael Arnett, the defense attorney for James Pivatt, said that anytime you have a husband murdered, any police department is going to focus their attention on the wife or spouse or whatever. So when Brenda was brought in for questioning, they said she was so distraught about the murder that they were pretty sure she had nothing to do with it. Like, just from her demeanor alone, they felt like this is a grieving woman.
And the Academy Award goes to...
Right? Police started talking to friends and family. They learned about the rumored affair with James Pivatt. And James Murray said that they were apparently so bad at hiding the affair that literally everyone around them could tell that they were involved in a way that was unseemly. But he said in a way that seemed unseemly. That's how he said it.
Yes. I just decided to correct
Yeah, you fixed it for him. Yeah, because after he said it, I was like, you could say in a way that was unseemly, but he was like, in a way that seemed
unseemly.
Yeah, and then, you know, as soon as he said it, he was like, I should have. I said seemed too much.
Yes,
now.
He did. So police also learned that James had just sold Rob a $1 million life insurance policy, which we talked about earlier. And since the divorce wasn't finalized, Rob hadn't removed Brenda as the beneficiary.
Mm-hmm. And what was really disturbing was what Rob told the insurance company weeks before the murder. The prosecutor said that Rob told them that his insurance agent and his wife were in cahoots to try to kill him.
Whoa.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
I get, like, and what do you do with that information? Like, I wish somebody would have reported that, but at the same time, it's like, if you bring that to the police and they say, well, has he been attacked? No. Okay, well, let us know when he, you know, like.
Has he been threatened? Has he been, yeah, it's like, a feeling doesn't really get you very far, but then look at this, you know?
I know, it's like, yeah, could we have prevented it somehow by reporting that? I don't know. Yep. But that wasn't the only time that Rob was worried someone was out to get him. He and his mechanic had a discussion about it the day that his brakes failed. The mechanic said that it was quite obvious that his front brake lines had been cut, and Rob said, Phil, I think someone is out to take my life.
And that is, I feel like that is evidence enough, but who, he didn't see who did it.
Right, yeah.
So it's circumstantial at best.
Yeah, for sure. So we have an affair, a huge life insurance policy, a cut brake line. Police were sure something was up with James Pivatt. He moved to the top of the suspect list. They wanted to talk to Brenda again, but they hit a little snarl in the investigation.
Especially another from Drop Dead Gorgeous. When she's brushing her hair.
Uh-huh.
She's like, is everything okay? Just like, just a little snarl.
That's like huge clumps of hair coming out. Yeah. It started when Rob's funeral failed to start on time. So everybody's kind of like sitting there looking around and they're like, okay, when is this thing gonna start?
Kick off,
what's
yeah.
going on? And finally, a minister came out and said that they weren't starting on time because some of the family members weren't there yet. And they figured out that Brenda and the children were not there. And police were immediately like, they're on the run. They've taken off.
And they were.
But yeah, they were. But
at this point, they've said James moved to the top of the suspect list. They don't say anything about suspecting Brenda, investigating Brenda. I know they said they wanted to talk to her again, but what reason does she have to run right now? And why do they immediately think she's gone on the run? Like,
well, but the thing is, even if, let's just say that she herself was like, I don't have anything to lose here. I'm not going on the run. She goes on the run with James. Mm-hmm. So maybe they were like, you know, we're in this together. It's us against the world or whatever.
Yeah. I just wondered why, like, I felt like that was a gap there, well, that I was like, well, what happened in between that? Were they telling her that they were suspecting her? Were they naming her as a suspect at this point? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
What gave her the, like, okay, we need to get out of here?
Well, and if she didn't think that, if nothing had happened, that's a total admission of guilt, I feel like, you know?
Yes, yeah, definitely seems like it. Police were super worried they'd left the country, and they got, I mean, they were really afraid that they were going to head to somewhere that didn't have extradition.
Like Costa Rica?
Yeah, I think she mentioned Costa Rica. Yeah. And it got, I mean, it became national news at the time. One of the reporters said, you know, you've got a wife accused of killing her husband, taking her children, fleeing the country, and all of this is centered around a church.
So it gets pretty big.
It's salacious.
Yes.
So police are looking everywhere for Brenda, and they had literally nothing to go on. Finally, in February 2002, cops got a lead. The afternoon of February 28, they got a call that Brenda and James were in custody at the U.S.-Mexico border. They were attempting to leave the U.S. After booking them in Texas, they were shipped back to Oklahoma City. The kids were placed in the custody of Rob's parents, and Brenda and James were charged with first-degree murder and held without bond. This confused me a little bit. They said prosecutors, because the narrator said they were charged with the identical crime of first-degree murder. I'm like, I did just this, just they were both charged with first-degree murder.
Yeah, make a big deal about it being identical.
Identical. But then they said, but prosecutors decided to try them separately because they thought they would definitely get a conviction with James. And once they convicted him,
they thought if they had the conviction with James, then they could totally convict Brenda.
Yeah. But wouldn't that also bode the same way if they were tried together? Like, isn't it that, like, guilty by association? That's why they tried the West Memphis 3 together, because
they look more guilty just being on trial together.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I've not understood yet or found why sometimes they choose to try them together and why they don't, but
I do feel like in this case specifically, it kind of worked in their favor because of reasons that we'll get into in just a second. I don't want to be the narrator of Snapped and spoil it already, but
exactly. So on August 25th, 2003, the trial for James began, and the prosecution began talking about the fact that James was a skilled army sniper. I was like,
okay, you guys didn't mention that. I get Snap's angle. They're trying really hard to, like, drop these bombshells to where you make that exact noise that you just made.
Mm-hmm. But they say it in such passing, like,
I know.
That, like, was like, oh, well, he was a sniper, and, you know, they talked about the affair. I'm like, hey, hold on to the sniper thing here, like.
And they bring it up a little bit later, but never anything in detail.
Yeah, like, that's a huge deal, knowing that he was shot and killed, like,
by a sharp shooter.
Yeah, a sharp shooter, yeah. A prudential agent also testified that James had hindered Rob from removing Brenda from the life insurance policy. That's a big deal.
A really big deal.
Yeah, and they're like, we don't have the, like, smoking gun, but we do have a lot of circumstantial evidence. But considering that Rob bought the policy from James, James is having an affair with Brenda, they're about to get a divorce, so Rob is calling and saying, I need to remove her because we're no longer going to be married. And James has given him the runaround on it. Yeah,
James is like, I'm actually going through a ton.
Yeah, and so he so happens to be killed before the divorce is finalized. That all adds up right there. Like, that's, yeah, it's circumstantial, but it's very compelling. But James's defense pointed out that the state's case lacked motive. His attorney was like, James had absolutely nothing to gain from Rob's death. They were about to be divorced. If his motive was that he wanted to be with Brenda, if he just waited a couple more weeks, that would have been possible. I'm like, did you not hear the $1 million life insurance policy?
I know. And I know that James Pavatt wasn't on the he wasn't a beneficiary, but he was dating a beneficiary. So I'm sure he was like, score.
Yeah, exactly.
Rich
they,
girlfriend.
They obviously made that plan together because he's the one that Rob bought it through.
Yeah.
And he's also making it very difficult for Rob to take her off of it. There's a reason for that because, yeah, they're going to, she's telling him they're going to have that money together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course it's motive. I was like, are you serious? But the jury was like, well, we don't buy that. We think there's definitely motive. So they convicted him and sentenced him to death.
I couldn't believe that. That was really shocking to me.
Yeah. I thought so, too. On June 17th, 2004, Brenda's trial began. And unlike James's trial, the state did have a motive.
Which, okay, that's...
They did have
a motive. Quote, unquote, unlike James's trial.
Like, exactly. They had the same exact motive. They argued that she wanted out of her marriage, but not her lifestyle. And when James came along, it showed her a way out. Prosecution also attacked Brenda's squeaky clean image. Apparently, James was not the only quote-unquote extracurricular activity that Brenda had. So some guy gets on the stand and says that he met her at the vegetable bin at the grocery store. And he's like, oh, you know, we're like talking carrots and whatever. And then
I decided to go ahead and put in here that apparently they weren't just discussing that. They were also discussing the size of his cucumber.
Yeah. And apparently she said, started talking about like, give me a motel key or whatever. Like, give me the key to your motel room. Let's do this. Like,
she's like, I'll do it right here if that's the problem.
At the grocery store. That's bold.
I mean, it works. Guess. Have you seen Animal House?
Well, yeah, I guess it works. But she had multiple affairs other than James. I wonder if James knew that, but
I bet he didn't.
Probably not.
He's like, seriously?
Yeah, exactly. I killed your husband.
I thought that we had something special.
I thought that we were going to spend $1 million together.
Exactly.
So after trashing her reputation, prosecutors attacked her emergency room visit. They claimed that it was nothing more than an attempt to get Rob killed in a car accident. We're a broken record. We say it every episode. These are short episodes, but...
Spend more time on that?
Yeah, I wish they would give us, because when they get to the trial part in these, they're just like...
They're so rushed, and then they bring out all this information, and we're like, what?
Well, and they also are just like, you know, her emergency room visit was nothing more than an attempt to get Rob killed in a car accident. I think that that's right, but what information do you have to back that up? Like, they put their claims out there or, like, their accusations, and I'm like, but what did you find that backs that up? Do we have phone records showing that somebody from your house called, you know, him that day? Or did we have James Babbat's records and somebody called from his work? You know, like, whatever. I would like to see... Yeah. What information they have that backs that up, but they skip over all evidence and they just...
Like this blanket.
Yeah. Because...
Charges.
You can't always believe what the prosecution... The prosec... The...
the other lawyers...
Yeah. Those other guys say. You can't always believe it.
The prosecution...
Prosecution says, yeah, you can't always believe that.
Right.
And it's unfortunate, but we know that now, that, like, sometimes they'll put stuff out there, nothing to back it up. I would just like to know what they have to back it up.
Yep.
Prosecutors said that when that didn't work, they planned a different way to get rid of Rob. They decided that James would shoot him and make it look like a robbery gone wrong, which they did a horrible job of, because it's in the garage, they don't even go inside the house, nothing's taken again.
Yeah.
But the defense was like, okay, that's cute, but Rob wasn't the only victim that was shot. Brenda got shot too. So basically all of your other stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah, and the prosecution is like, okay, well, hold up. Uh-huh. Because what happened was the gunshot was superficial and the barrel of the gun was pressed up against her skin or within inches of it, which meant that Brenda herself pulled the trigger on the wound that she received.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how. I've seen Scream. This is where my information is coming from. So clearly I'm an expert on it.
Sure.
You can have someone shoot you very close, at a close range. It doesn't have to be coming from you. Did they find fingerprints on the, like, I don't know.
See, yeah, that's the other thing. What tells them that? Because
I mean, I'm sure there's like some stuff with like the trajectory or whatever. I mean, maybe you could tell because of the way it's going down that it was like she would have been holding it in this hand and put, I don't know. But yeah, they don't say anything. So it's like, How do we know she was holding it? We don't. I mean, we don't. They might, but they're not sharing that information with us.
Yeah, but they're playing it very opposite LeVar Burton. Like, you do have to take my word for it.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not willing to do that. Okay.
You're going to have to be, though. We have nothing else to go on.
That's true. I'll just believe him. It's what I have to do. But they also said that the evidence showed that James fired the first shot at Rob, and then Brenda fired the second shot. And again...
How do they know that?
And the only thing that they gave us there was because of the way the blood spatter was.
Well, and I guess... Okay. But they did... Brenda's story the whole time was that two masked gunmen had done this. So... By that logic, I would say the reasoning for saying it's two is because there were two different guns involved.
Yeah, maybe. Well, yeah, and they said the blood spatter. I'm like, well, if she was standing close enough to him.
If she was standing right next to him, he was getting shot. She was not pulling the trigger. She'd still get blood on her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and I don't know if that's what they meant, that just she had some on her or what. But again,
they showed a picture of her sleeve with blood. Ooh. Blood.
Not so easy to say words, is it?
With blood droplets on her sleeve. I don't even know where I got the G from.
I don't know. It's what happens, man. Okay. There's two kind of stunner things that the prosecution pulls out in this case. The first one is, or I'm sorry, the defense. The first one is a letter from James, quote unquote, to Tricity, stating that he killed Rob alone. Brenda had nothing to do with it. He's just like, dear Tricity, I killed your dad. Your mom didn't do it. Lila's bye, James. Yes. But they show the writing, and I'm like,
it's totally a female's handwriting.
That's a woman's writing. Yeah. There's absolutely no way that a man wrote that. It's in cursive. It's very
bubbly.
Very bubbly. Yeah. I was I don't think so.
I know. In my mind, I was like, that is not a male's handwriting.
Never, never, never. No.
And then directly after that, they were like, handwriting experts were like, nuh-uh.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, Brenda wrote that her own self.
The only way that you can get away with fabricating a letter is to type it.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to type it. That's the only, Because it's very obviously... It's a very distinct writing pattern, too.
She writes it out, and then she's like, XOXO Brenda. Oh, no! And then she scratches it out and like, James.
Yeah, exactly. And she's like, well, I don't have another blank piece of paper, so this is the one that's got to go. She didn't try to disguise her handwriting at all. And I haven't seen James's handwriting, but I'm positive if you put her handwriting and his handwriting together, like, next to each other, there would be vast differences.
Night and day.
Yeah, and, there's no way that his writing is anywhere close to that. It's just insane. So everybody's like, okay, well, we don't believe that at all, obviously. But then the prosecution said, we have a surprise here. I mean, I was literally like, oh. Brenda did not just have a life insurance policy on her husband, Rob. She had also taken one out on James. And listen to this. Her plan was...
Listen how squeaky you're getting.
I cannot believe this. Her plan was James would kill Rob, then James would get arrested for her husband's murder, and when he was executed, she would then collect the life insurance policy on him.
Doesn't she know anything, though? People can stay on death row for their entire lives.
Yeah, exactly. I was like,
Well, that was kind of dumb to say.
Well,
no matter what happens, it's going to be for your entire life.
Yeah, I guess so, but it's... It can be a very long time. You have the appeals process. Yeah, many, many years. Yeah, I was just like, oh, my God. That's pretty... I mean, and they weren't married or anything, so she just went and took out a policy on him. And obviously, he didn't know that, right?
Oh, I'm sure he did not.
Like...
I would guess he didn't go... She didn't go through him to get it.
Right, exactly. On July 13th, the jury broke for deliberation. After just 6 hours, they returned and found her guilty. And her sister Kimberly was like, I was devastated. I thought she had a really good chance of being acquitted. I'm like, did you not hear any of it?
Clearly, she is definitely Team Brenda.
Yeah. Because in the beginning, when she was talking about how devastated she was about Rob's death and that she was really good friends with him, I thought she was going to...
like, see the light.
Yeah, and be like, okay, well, I don't appreciate that my sister killed him, but...
she still is like, where are those two masked gunmen? The police obviously do not care.
Yeah, exactly. I was just kind of surprised. And she's like, you know, Brenda's a good, loving mother who was convicted on circumstantial evidence. And I'm like, well, yeah, and so are a lot of people. And a lot of times circumstantial evidence can be more compelling than direct evidence sometimes. After her sentencing, Brenda made one last plea, and she said,
I am an innocent woman wrongfully convicted. I love my children dearly, and I'm a loving, gentle, and compassionate mother.
And she said that with no emotion whatsoever.
There were no tears. There was no
nothing.
And you would think, I mean, even if she was actually wrongly convicted, which I don't think she was, she would maybe feel badly about this. I know it's been years since her husband died and they were going through a divorce, but still it's like, I don't know. I think it would have gone further for her.
Mm-hmm.
For her to, like, show any kind of emotion.
Yeah, exactly. She was also sentenced to death, though.
The jury was like, nope.
Yeah. And a neighbor said that he thought it was fitting, given the nature of the crime. He's like, I think they both basically got what they should have gotten because of what happened. Brenda Andrew, at the time of the recording, Brenda Andrew is currently the only woman on death row in the state of Oklahoma. Her case is currently on appeal. James Pavatt is also on death row at Oklahoma State Penitentiary in McAllister, Oklahoma. Brenda's two children live with their father's parents in Enid.
And then I did some Googling, and this is the most recent article that I could find on Brenda Andrew. It was an article from September 25th, 2019, and it said on April 15th, 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected Andrew's appeal of an earlier court decision upholding her conviction and sentence without comment. While no executions have been carried out in the state since 2015, Brenda Andrew remains on death row in the Mabel Bassett Correctional Center in McLeod, Oklahoma.
I was very surprised about that life insurance policy on James Pavatt.
I think we all saw it coming when she started wearing capris.
Well.
To church.
The nerve.
I know.
Yeah.
She had nerve. A lot.
You are never going to let me live this. This whole thing down. You know, you're not supposed to go through somebody else's private stuff.
You abandoned that 17 years ago, so Judge Judy would say that was fine.
I don't think Judge Judy would appreciate you holding this over my head,
actually. I don't think Judge Judy would stop laughing.
Probably not.
Flirting the heck. That was what Brenda was doing. She was flirting the heck out of every man in the town.
She was.
Wearing her pedal pushers, just flirting the heck out of everybody.
You better shut it.
I can't.
Well, let this be a lesson to you. Never let your little sister find your diary from 17 years ago that you totally thought you threw away.
I am so happy that I found it.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty obvious.
That makes one of us. Yeah. But thanks for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.